Welcome to episode 41 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski in what turned out to be a warm Pennsylvania today. Joining me as always, Jeff Smith in Washington. Hello.
Hey, Eric, not quite so warm out here today. I'm telling you that the last five or six holes today just about froze me.
Well, you got to play golf, and despite the fact that it was 65 here today, I did not, so.
Oh, no snow on the ground, huh?
I haven't played since the Newport Cup, so.
Okay.
I was too busy raking leaves and trying to get better today. I was a little sick, so.
Okay, yeah.
I'm muddling through, man, muddling through. Muddled through is something that KJ Choi did not have to do at the Chrysler, who knows what, something or other. No, the Chrysler the Chrysler Championship, you know, there's the Buick, they got like eight tournaments, and then Chrysler has a couple. I think Ford is the only car people, they're the only car people with only one tournament. But anyway, the Chrysler Championship. KJ Choi walks away with a four-shot win. I think he shot two under par on the last day or something pretty boring. KJ Choi, kind of the late-season winner, you know. He won the 2005 Chrysler Classic at Greensboro and then the 2006 Chrysler Championship. So he likes events late in the year, and he likes events by car manufacturers because he also won the 2002 Tampa Bay Classic presented by Buick.
Yep. He's been there. He's been there before.
He's absent pretty much the entire year until you get to the end of the year. And then the past 2 years, he's won, you know, something in the month of September or October. It's kind of, where does he go the first 8 months of the year?
I don't know. He seems to shine here towards the end, and it was pretty impressive to see him play well like he did.
And it's a decent course, so it attracts some decent players. Vijay Singh, Ernie Els, and some others were in the field.
Maybe it's a case of the pressure off, the heat of battle, the season is coming to a close, and he's there just to play his game, and it certainly has turned out well for him.
That could be. We'll talk a little bit more about the driver he used to win, but kind of a walk in the park, really. Paul Guidos, happily enough, you know, will be in the top 125, so not too much of a shakeup around the 125 spot. Not too much. I mean, it was kind of a boring day. I watched parts of it, and, you know, every time I looked, you know, KJ Choi was winning by one shot more, so. Nobody put any pressure on him, and whatever, a good way to finish out the year for KJ Choi. Always Mr. Smiley, so.
That's right.
Tiger Woods, you and I ragged on Phil Mickelson last week and the week before for skipping the Tour Championship, and now it's our turn to rag on Tiger Woods because he's decided that he's fatigued and is going to skip the Tour Championship like Fatty Phil.
We're not going to be hypocritical here. We can bag on all people.
That's right. Well, this is one of those things. Tiger Woods has played, like we said last week, four tournaments, I think, this year, and won eight of them. and yet, he hasn't played since the week after the Ryder Cup, which was in September. And now he's skipping the Tour Championship.
Yeah, and I think he's looking ahead to the silly season. He's got some events overseas that he's going to be playing, and he's probably thinking to himself, well, you know, I've got that to worry about, plus next season looming ahead in the not-too-distant future. So, you know, I'm sure in his mind he's thinking, well, I can kind of skip this one so I can have a little more time off. But I think it was kind of poor planning on his part.
Yeah, he's playing the HSBC in Thailand or whatever that is. He's playing, of course, his Target World Championship. He's playing the Grand Slam of Golf, of course, next year, and one other event somewhere in there. So he's playing four events between now and January. They say they expect him to start at the Mercedes Championship, which is the winners-only event in Hawaii. You know, he may skip that, too. I mean, January is not that far away. Yeah. If you watch the Golf Channel for more than 10 minutes, you'll see that they have a countdown to the start of the 2007 PGA Tour season, and the number's in the 60s.
It's coming.
So it's not that far away. But at the same time, the Tour Championship is one of the few times a year, and the majors are the others, where the top players in golf are guaranteed to be together. So it's disappointing from a fan perspective that any top player would leave. You know, these are the top 30 guys. We realize it's kind of a crapshoot, and if you finish last, you'd make $100,000 anyway. But as much as we ragged on Phil, the same applies to Tiger. It's a crappy way to treat.
Well, and it's true. It's not treating your fellow players very well. I mean, a lot of guys work really hard to get into the Tour Championship, and the best that Tiger Woods can do is kind of send out goodwill by saying he wants to stress to everyone that missing the championship is no reflection on my feelings toward the event.
Right.
So at least he feels good about the event.
Well, it's interesting to see how this will play out next year when the FedEx Cup rolls around, and you know that there's that 4 or 5 week march to the Tour Championship. If Phil and Tiger don't care about the Tour Championship, who's to say they're going to care about those 4 or 5 events where they have to play every week to stay in the race or whatever it is, you know?
Well, it's going to make it pretty tough for some, perhaps, to be interested in golf at that point. You know, I mean, with the World Series and football in full swing at that point, you know, some people's attention is diverted. But, you know, that $10 million check, whoever picks that up, I mean, that's going to draw some attention. I think we're going to see even ESPN start to report on some of that stuff because that's a big, big paycheck.
Hey, but yeah, they've yet to decide too whether that's $10 million right away or $10 million in retirement or whatever. But just saying $10 million sounds good.
Yeah, it's impressive enough to me.
Moving on here to the top 125. Obviously, last week was the final week for players hoping to keep their tour cards. Darren Clark landed on the number at 125 with $660,898. So almost $700,000 was needed just to keep your tour card. You almost had to make $1 million, you know, or three-quarters of $1 million to keep your tour card. Yeah. Rich Beam fell 2 spots from 124 to 126. Bubba Dickerson, 127. Some guy named Bubba. Yeah. John Cook, Lee Westwood, Duffy Waldorf, Tim Petrovic, Brent Guyberger, Omar Oresti, Jonathan Kay. I mean, right there, 128 through 135 is a lot of people you know, too. Arjun Atwal at 140, Bob May at 141, Lee Jansen at 146, Tag Ridings and Chris Riley at 149 and 150. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just going down the list here and calling out names. Skip Kendall at 157, John Houston at 159, D.A. Points at 162, disappointing year for him. And, of course, Scott Gutchewski, a long hitter at 167, Graham McDowell's way down there. Of course, he's more of a European player, so it doesn't matter so much. Paul Stankowski at 171. David Duvall, here we go, at 172. And for those still wondering, John Daly ended up at 193.
Yeah, he's going to be sponsor exemption, man, from now on.
John Daly winning a massive $192,000 and 134.
I think he took his wife being in prison a little hard.
Or something. I mean, he should have been raising money to get her out or something. I don't know. Throw her a big party.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to see, also on the other end of things, you know, those who miss a tour championship, you got some interesting names there. Jose Maria Olazabal, just one place out. Of course, Tim Clark, Mike Weir, Troy Mattison, really close. I mean, boy, that guy jumped up in a hurry. He's at 36.
Yeah, and that's the other disappointing side of it, is if a player in the top 30 doesn't play the tour championship, they don't give the next guy on the list the chance.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
They're going to play with 27 or 28, so that really kind of sucks, because whatever. And
I think it does. We talked about this last year, and I think that's kind of a real bummer. I mean, if, you know, a guy like Tiger Woods is going to bail out, well, then let's reward someone else who cares about it, you know?
Right. Oh, well.
So, there we are.
You're right. Yeah, Tim Clark right there, Mike Weir, Cherry Kelly, Scott Verplank, a few others, you know, in the top 40-ish, but not quite in the top 30. So.
And Fred Funk just turning 50. He's at 48th. I mean, you know, he's still, you know, he's, what is he, 15, 20 places, 20-some-odd places out of the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
Man, there's a guy who continues to play well, short hitter, but still 48th on the money list.
And winning $1.6 million. Granted, he did play 29 events. So
yeah,
that helps. Tiger Woods, by the way, played officially 15, not quite 4. But. And here's the interesting thing. 9,941,563. That's Tiger Woods' total earnings. Divided by 15, Tiger Woods' average earnings would have gotten him in the Tour Championship. he would have kept his tour card. With his average earnings per tournament.
Not too bad.
That kind of blows your mind, man.
He's in a different league. And the difference between Tiger and Jim is, you know, $3 million plus. So
several events, yeah. And now that my mind is blown, I'm going to try to piece it back together. Stay tuned here for Chip Shots and Golf Gods from Golf Gods and an ad from Titleist. We'll be right back.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand, and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip. Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
All right, welcome back. We're going to tackle this whole issue of the Big Break and some of the characters on the Big Break. Eric and I were just talking about Kelly.
For lack of better topics this week.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Kelly, I mean, I kind of see Kelly as the Zen man. He's the, you know, Coach Phil of the Big Break. Of course, I didn't see last week, so maybe you can fill me in on maybe why I shouldn't like Kelly, Eric.
Well, it's obvious in watching last week, it was kind of interesting where Kelly, who's a Mo Norman, you know, student, a natural golf, you know, one of those guys who, you know, Mo Norman was supposedly he could, you know, put a stick in the fairway 250 yards out and he would hit that before someone would hole a 40-foot putt. And, you know, there are 10 tons of Mo Norman stories. Most of them have to do with him being accurate. And this guy has yet to find these, you know, 65-yard wide fairways, this Kelly guy. Well, all the while bragging about, you know, how great he is. He saved Bree's butt a couple episodes ago when she wanted to dump him, basically for being a goofball. but then he misses the fairway yet again, hits it in the junk, takes a horrible drop, basically somehow manages to make a miraculous bogey. Fortunately, the gal he was playing against makes a bogey too, but the whole time his teammates are going, "Don't let him near me. I don't even want to hear it. Just keep him away from me. He's an idiot." And it's obnoxious the way he talks. He, you know, he was like, "I wish they had saved me for last. I would have been good on that two-pointer. I'm clutch, baby." You know, it's just like, oh, get over it. But once again, I think the thing that's impressed me the most or stuck out the most to me about the Big Break is the poor quality of the players, to be honest, on the show. These aren't LPGA or Champions Tour quality players.
Right.
Nobody's really had any success in using their Big Breaks to further their careers. You know, who have we heard from?
Yeah, well, because anybody with any kind of, well, with that level of talent is not going to need a Big Break because their game is going to speak for itself, you know. So they're looking for folks who aren't necessarily right there.
You'd think they wouldn't mind, you know, a trip to Hawaii, though.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, come on.
Absolutely true.
And especially now that, you know, the Champions Tour, since you can't actually qualify for it, you think they could have found some better players.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, well. We don't have much to say about that anymore, anyway. But if you have something to say, check our podcast show notes and contribute to the Big Break 6 Trump National thread. See, nobody posted anything ripping on Jack Nicklaus this week, so we couldn't choose that as the forum topic this week.
Yeah, unfortunately.
He dotted the I in the Ohio script, I know that, but that's not really news. It's all about I for Jack Nicklaus. How about that?
the unholy trinity, me, myself, and I?
Yeah. There's no I in team, but there's a me. we'll be right back once again. Stay with us.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of dress.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. This first story here in our Beating Balls segment talks about the square driver that KJ Choi used, the Nike Sumo 2. We just did a story on that in Bagdrop, but it talks about Europeans and the fact that Tiger Woods is the one weakness in his game right now is driving. And of course, Nike has the Sumo, which KJ Choi used with great effectiveness in winning the Chrysler Championship. And it says, "It could become even harder for these Europeans to win majors next season if Tiger Woods takes advantage of the new square-headed driver that has been on show. They also believe that it might straighten out Tiger's weakness. After yesterday's round, Nick Doherty said, 'Thank God Tiger's driving like he is, or there'd be no point in the rest of us turning up. There almost isn't now. If he starts driving it again like he did in 2000, then we really needn't bother because his iron play and short game is so much better than it was then.'"
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing, you know, Tiger, he swings so fast. And I think one of the things we saw, particularly at the British Open, is, man, when he reins it in, and he, of course, he didn't even hardly use driver at the Open. Yeah, I mean, what's that? That's like not even pulling it out of the bag hardly. I mean, if he can hold himself back, which I think he's learning to do, and as he settles into this new swing change, you know, I mean, Tiger's a talent, and sumo or no sumo, the guy's gonna just dominate this tour for years.
Yeah, and I think wanting Tiger to hit driver more may be the better thing to do, and wanting him to hit it slightly better, in fact, may be bad for Tiger. You know, I think the best thing someone could do for Tiger would be to take all of his woods out of his bag, except maybe his 5-wood, and say, go play. Because, you know, he can't help but hit that reasonably straight. And he still hits it 260, which is, you know.
This is insanity.
With his bunt swing. So,
yeah. With his B-game.
Yeah, he hits it far enough. His driver, if he hits it slightly better, he may actually pull it more, and he might actually get in more trouble than he does. So, I mean, he didn't hit the driver very often at the PGA Championship either. You know, he hit a lot of 3-woods and 5-woods. So if he had been slightly better, he might have pulled it more often and, you know, found the rough a bit more often. So, yeah. You know, it's a fine line between, you know, hitting it well and hitting it well enough. What are your thoughts on these square drivers that are coming out? I mentioned we have the bag drop article here on the Nike Sumo and the Callaway FTI. What do you think?
Well, lots of buzz. I mean, lots and lots of buzz right now about this new design. And what I've kind of noticed is there's a lot more openness amongst players to accept these kind of drivers. I can remember when Nike released their Sasquatch, and there was like, oh, that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I'd never play that. But now I'm hearing people say, hey, you know, well, if it hits it straight and long, you know, I might just throw it in the bag. So, man, I don't know what I think. I mean, in terms of the USGA, I think that as long as equipment companies continue to keep things within the moment of inertia numbers and, you know, everything, it's great. I mean, I'm looking forward to trying one just to see what it's like.
Yeah.
If I can hit it straight and long, well, shoot, you know, why not?
Yeah, the word on the street for both of them, particularly the square ones, is that they're very straight, and it makes sense. You know, peripheral weighting, you know, the farthest out you can get is the corners. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
They may not be quite as long as some of the current drivers is also what I'm hearing. So,
yeah, well, and
aerodynamics or whatever, but
yeah, and you know, you look at a guy like me who's a bit of a higher handicap player. I mean, to put it in the short grass, that's the main thing. And if you can knock it out there 250, 260, hey, you know, the average player is really going to benefit from a club like that. So
right. It's interesting too. You mentioned, you know, even the high bore was met with some resistance, but the people that tried it, you know, except for the closed face sending it left for me.
Right.
You know, it really did seem to have a tight dispersion and hit the ball reasonably straight. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll see. Lauren Roberts, the boss of the Moss, misses a 4-foot putt. He 3-putts the last hole to lose $500,000 in the Schwab Cup, giving Jay Haas the title.
Yeah.
Not what you would expect.
Not what you'd expect from the boss of the Moss.
No.
And what I enjoyed so much about the last couple of weeks, it has been so tight. You look at the leaderboard, and Jay Haas and Lauren Roberts are right there. It's not as if one of them distanced themselves from the other. They just stayed really tight until man, unfortunately for Lauren, you know, that's not the way you like to see it. You know, you'd rather see someone make a birdie for the win, but
right.
Unfortunately, he
even last
you know,
year,
three putts.
You know, Dana Quigley won the tournament and won the event. Tom Watson finished second, so
yeah,
you know. If Tom Watson had won the event, he would have won. If he didn't and Dana Quigley won, then Dana Quigley won it. So that's how it turned out. And this year, Jay Haas is sitting in the scoring tent thinking, I'm not going to win. He's going to 2-putt. And then he 3-putts, missing a 4.5-foot putt after blowing it past. And, you know, Jim Thorpe kind of wins the runner-up prize of winning the tournament. But, you know, he didn't have enough points to win the Charles Schwab Cup at that point.
Yeah. For me, it really kept my interest. I enjoyed following that the last, I don't know, 2-3-4 weeks of the season here.
Even if there's no chance for you to ever play in the Champions Tour because of their dumb restrictions, huh?
Yeah, well, I think there's probably no chance of me playing there for other restrictions, but
Dana Quigley has not replied to my letter yet, but
well, we'll look forward to hearing that. That'll be a fun one to talk about.
He's probably still, you know, trying to play the Champions Tour, but now they're done, so he should have time.
He's got time to read his mail now.
Yeah. Our final note here is more of just a matter of interest. The USGA has nominated 3 new people to the executive committee. Craig Ammerman of Cherry Hill, New Jersey, Lewis Blakely of Alexandria, Virginia, and James Reinhardt of Mequon, Wisconsin are retiring. And then we have Christy Austin of Cherry Hills Village in Colorado, John Kim of Farmington, Connecticut, and Jeffrey Yang of Menlo Park, California. Interesting to see two people from west of the Mississippi in that list. The USGA has long been a bastion of folks from right near, you know, Far Hills, New Jersey, kind of the Connecticut, you know, northeastern country club mentality, or the Augusta National area.
Right.
So interesting to see two people on the executive committee, or potentially, you know, nominated from west of the Mississippi, whether or not, you know, and they're a bit younger, too, than some of the others. So be interesting to see what their take on, you know, distance and grooves and goodness knows what else is. But that'll shake out in the next year or so. Just a heads up, go ahead and check it out and check out the bios and stuff. Walter Driver will be serving another 1 year term as president of the USGA. That about does it for this week. Next week, we're going to talk about the Tour Championship. Although, who knows, maybe we'll talk about every player in the Tour Championship because there might only be 12 left by then. I don't know, but Tiger and Phil will be skipping, of course. So we'll talk about the Tour Championship. And the week after that, we'll have our season-ending wrap-up of year-end awards. So for Jeff Smith, this is Eric Brzezinski saying ta-ta for now, boys and girls. Bye-bye.
See you next time. Bye-bye.